And we are live. This is Dark Journalists. What a fantastic crowd we have out there in the ideas room tonight. Of course, tonight I am joined by the lovely Olivia.
Hi, everybody.
And Olivia, kind of an interesting afterburn around the sighted objects, mm-hmm. I would say. And Saturday night is all right for fighting on this. One of the things I'd like to really point out for everyone who's been watching over the past few weeks as we've been reporting on the surge of airborne objects that they've been shooting down. Of course, we had Dr. Farrell on last night giving us his take on this, is that they've kind of tried to bottle it into this thing where they ran this test and they got their reaction they were looking for, and now they're kind of processing in the background. That's the take that they were looking for, but something strange is going on in the background, and it's happening in Montana. And we're going to get into that tonight in the special report, which is the UFO Fire in the Sky. I should have added Montana to the title, but I may be doing just a full episode on that. We're going to go maybe about 90 minutes tonight, and we're going to take questions in the second part of the program that Miss Olivia is going to be collecting those questions and putting them together. How are you doing out there?
Doing great.
Fantastic.
What's, we got a big crowd tonight.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I love to see so many familiar faces. I was mentioning Dr. Farrell's appearance last night, which a lot of you sent me emails about. There's a lot of interesting things with this because we've got a foundation going on the continuity of government program and the UFO file and the mix here. And then Dr. Farrell going so deep on the UFO file aspect as it was built up, that initial threat. This is the very helpful behind the scenes info from when they set up the UFO, working UFO file. But I'm going to show you that it goes back a lot further than that tonight. And what's going to be some helpful cross currents tonight is the work that we've done on the Cosmos Club, which was set up in the 1870s by a very interesting fellow who was stationed there at Cape Girardeau in Missouri, which would be the site of a major UFO sighting some years later. What I want to introduce tonight is the idea of a kind of ex-geography for this. So we're going to look at that. Of course, we've put some places on the map that weren't there before, like Moon, Pennsylvania, for example, and Pasadena, as a way to crisscross how the X technology is being rolled out, and of course, the entire geography of the hot zone there down in the Caribbean. Tonight, we're going to really explore a little town called Helena, Montana. And I guess not so little when you think about it, but for the catchphrase, it certainly works. Helena is very interesting, and some of its very interesting residents featured prominently during this whole balloon exercise that happened when they sent the China balloon over the border, and then it was showing up right there in that corridor. Now, one of the interesting things is we also saw that this was very close to the Malmstrom Air Force Base, and that had an intense sighting in 1967, which we're going to go over tonight as well, where a UFO just hovered over the base and shut off their missile silos. It's important because there's a lot of different theories about UFOs are attracted to nukes, and this is going to be an important piece of what we get into tonight. Another thing I want to mention about this is we're going to highlight a case that goes all the way back to 1870. Can you imagine that when you think about this? And believe it or not, it involves someone, Miss Olivia, called E.T. Johnson.
Really?
But this is interesting because there's been a lot of activity there over time. And if we look at over the past 150 years, it shows a definite pattern. Now, this focus on Montana is going to help us because I believe that they're laying out these zones that are, I'm calling disclosure zones. And the disclosure zones are places where they plan to highlight and do this. Montana is certainly one of the key early areas. They plan to do it in Missouri is another one, and I've got four more. So we're going to get into those tonight. It is the continuity of government program, NORTHCOM players that are set in motion, the UFO threat narrative, and the Central Intelligence Agency laid the foundation with the TTSA and the Elizondo people. So we've had a lot of that threat action that they tried to push very hard through the media during the pandemic. And this gets us into an interesting area, because when we get into the UFO threat, we get into emergency powers, emergency programming. And with emergency powers come all of the sort of things that they can't do by election. They can only do by decree. And Stepford Biden and Trudeau and people like that really need decree emergency powers. They can't really govern with the very small sliver of supports that they have. So this plays into a large picture that's been in the works really since World War II. And the kind of denouement of the UFO file are these disclosure zones in the United States that will form the backdrop for rolling out the UFO threat. And I'm sorry for those UFO researchers who are still like, oh, they'd never pull that, you know, and the CIA are okay, guys. all that stuff has to just go away now. And the whole like, hey, we're going to work with the government on disclosure. No, it's over. They literally just pulled a dry run of Project Bluebeam, which was supposed to be a street legend after all, because they attributed it, oh, it was some crazy French Canadian, he came up with it. That doesn't matter, you know, because Bluebeam, the idea, what's ingrained in it, is the UFO threat takeover, emergency powers. And of course, the continuity of government players have that in their playbook. So, you know, researchers in this field are just going to have to get their act together, or, you know, we're just going to have to focus in on people who are looking at the real play on the ground. And I do find it fascinating that, you know, after we've had incidents where NORAD shot down something for the first time in 65 years, that none of the UFO people see the handwriting on the wall. That's bothersome. Shows me that the large gist of that researcher community has just been, you know, addled or in some way or sidewind. It's very important, in my opinion, that we get to the truth of the matter on the threat aspect and who's directing it, because it could be that you're simultaneously looking at a government group setting up a UFO threat on one side, and then on the other side, we are looking at the real thing happening. And the crisscross of those two, we get into a very tricky geopolitical situation, which is what we're looking at tonight. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. This is UFO fire in the sky, and we are focusing on some Montana, very, very interesting reports coming out of Montana. We're going to get to those in a minute. I want to remind everyone, if you haven't already, especially if you're new here, to go to the darkjournalist.com website and sign up for our newsletter that keeps us in great touch with each other. And really, in lieu of all the censorship, as a matter of fact, today I got locked out of the Dark Journalist Facebook account. So I couldn't even post tonight's show.
Any idea why?
Oh, some nonsense, mm-hmm. You know, but they always have something going on. But you see how that can work. They can just, you know, pull the plug. So the way that this works is the newsletter is, you know, it's just free, and it's something that you get in your inbox once a week. It lets you know the shows that we have coming up, the incredible, and I mean incredible interviews that we have coming your way, and fascinating X shows. The five-year anniversary of the X series is coming up as well. So make sure that you stand up and be counted and get on that newsletter list, and you're going to know the things that are coming up, including events for later this year as well. I also want to say that, you know, when it comes to the continuity of government emergency powers play, this is something that's been building in the background. We've tried to focus those people in who are on the deep state side and understand, you know, like a lot of those researchers are really good on the government side. And to get that going with the UFO research side, because the UFO research side lacks a great deal of depth when it comes to the deep state factor. And they don't seem, even though they do the whole, you know, oh, the government needs to give us the truth and things like that, they don't seem to understand that there are groups inside the government that are there just to suppress and not give disclosure. And it's not like you're working with some good guys that are going to bring the truth forward. It's just not going to happen that way. It's going to be a citizen-run effort And that's the way you can apply the proper amount of emphasis and pressure. More importantly, not to get caught flat-footed in the middle of a UFO threat operation, because as soon as they launch that, as I've said before, if you thought the COVID op was something, just wait till we get to the UFO threat operation. As we saw last week, it's not pretty. And, you know, there's all kinds of ways to get things confusing and chaotic. And they did it during Super Bowl week, mm-hmm. as we saw. All right, let's look a little bit at Helena, Montana. It's a very interesting place. I'm going to introduce you to some famous residents of Helena, Montana, and I'm going to show you how it all relates directly in this lineage of what's going on around Montana. And one of the things that we've been mentioning is, you know, maybe there's something specific about Montana that acts as a kind of a portal or a meeting point, a jumping off point in relation to the X technology, because it was used as a jump off point, as Dr. Farrell pointed out, when we were transferring uranium to the Soviet Union in anticipation of the fact that they were going to need these weapons to fight the Nazis. And these are things that came out much, much later. So I think they're important to pay attention. L. Ron Hubbard. Did you know that L. Ron Hubbard grew up in Helena, Montana? Considering his entire teaching is a space religion, in fact, that's an interesting piece right off the bat. A lot of the backdrop of Helena, before we even get to the specifics, and I have a lot of news reports about what's going on there since the original sightings, with some new sightings we're going to get into. But one of the things that grabbed me also was that Jesse Marcel's son lives there, and or lived there before he passed away, and that he moved there and lived there for three decades. So, you know, Marcel's son was someone who held the alien wreckage in his hand from the Roswell crash, or whatever that wreckage was. And, you know, in combination with his dad, knew a great deal and sought his whole life to unravel that entire mystery. What happened is, you know, over time with him joining the Navy and doing all these various military things, he decided the place to settle down was Helena. Well, that strikes me as interesting on an inside basis, because he may have been aware there's something going on here in relation to the UFO aspect, and I need to be there if I want to answer these questions. Makes a lot of sense to me, besides the fact that it's a beautiful place, which is always, you know, a thing that's going to grab you. Now, there's another piece to this that's involved with the people who promoted the CIA UFO threat piece in 2017 originally. And those were, as we know, the people like Lou Elizondo and all the rest that they rolled out on the CIA side to create this whole tic-tac and all this stuff. We've debunked that enough. I don't need to go into these details here. But one thing I will say is that Helene Cooper was the woman who wrote the article with Leslie Kane. And Helene Cooper is the embedded reporter for the Pentagon at the New York Times. And in fact, she came up recently during this whole spat of strange things going on. And she was the one who asked the NORTHCOM COG commander, you know, do you think it could be ET or aliens? And he answered, I'm not ruling anything out. And that's the thing that hung in the air as a headline for this whole period. So when we think about that, it's important to think, okay, here we have the same people on the front lines again around this. But Helene had another very interesting distinction in that her cousin is the mayor of Helena. And quite interestingly, and he's from Liberia. And so, you know, they said, well, he's the first black mayor of Montana as a state. And that's true. What's interesting is there was another black mayor of Montana, and that goes back to the 1880s before it was a state. And get ready. His name, as I said, mm-hmm. was E.T. Johnson. just think about that. Now, one of the things that grabs me about this is we're getting a lot of feedback there and fingerprints and signature around this town and then it shows up smack dab in the middle of the UFO wave and the shoot down wave. So a couple of quick things. That was General Van Herk who answered that question that way. And of course, I've mentioned before, he's the NORAD commander, he's the COG commander, and he is also the combatant COG commander of the United States. So he's a triple threat in that regard. Of course, someone has to have that role. But his very presence during the whole mix of the shoot down of the unidentified objects and the constant reference to UFOs in the mix of this was not good. When you think about it, if there's a UFO emergency, then he becomes the combatant commander of the United States, and he appoints regional governors to run different districts. That's the ultimate kind of military dictatorship takeover, the same way they would in a nuclear exchange. So we have to keep a very close eye on these authorities and scrutinize them. Very often, independent investigative journalism in general is adversarial journalism. It's not personal. It never can be, but it will be. You know, when you're investigating, for example, the CEO of a nuclear company that's dumping nuclear waste in the river, you're not going to, you know, shoot baskets with them. It's just not going to happen. So we have to be very real about this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take it from here and I'm going to rewind the events that happened with a big update around the Montana piece, which, by the way, is still happening. There are still flying objects being seen, being shot down, and, you know, the whole local population there around Billings and around Helena are seeing these things. So what is it that's going on now after supposedly the balloons and such are out of the way and the objects that were shot down in Alaska and over Lake Huron? Well, you know what they did with those? The Biden administration, after Stepford Biden wobbled to the microphone and gave a very, very brief press announcement before he started shouting at reporters that they shouldn't be so mean and expect him to answer questions, he said that we acted out of an abundance of caution, but he didn't explain anything, in fact. And he stuck to a pretty tight script, but whatever they've been doing with Biden, and I've raised this before, that before he did the debates in 2020, there were rumors over here at MIT that there was this drug called Storm that had been used on an experimental basis with Alzheimer's patients, and that they were going to try to give this to Biden to kind of liven him up and keep him with it so he wouldn't embarrass himself, because originally they weren't going to do debates because they thought, oh, I'm against Trump and I'll, you know, Biden will just go into a meltdown. But what happened was they gave him a lot of it. And so you'll see this once in a while when he needs to do something like the State of the Union, he will freak out in the middle of it and he will start to speak in this heavy duty voice. And during the State of the Union, one of the things that he did, in fact, was he started yelling about who would be in the dictator's shoes. And then he was like, who, you know, and just like flipping out. And so the end of that press conference where he was talking about the objects and saying they weren't from China, you know, that started, he started to do some of the weird storm drug activity. And I think when they feed him too much of this stuff, you know, it's my impression that they're giving him a little too much to make him seem sharp. But what it's doing is it's showing him with really sharp edges. Mm-hmm. It's like giving him 10 cups of coffee to make him look sharp. And he's getting very annoyed.
I know what that feels like.
Let's look at some of these incidents that started to happen after they now abandoned the search. And I announced that live during the Dr. Farrell episode in the Ideas Room. And they said, well, we're not even going to look for the Lake Huron object. And the other Alaska object, we don't care. You know, we can't find it. The conditions are too difficult. That was like when they said, oh, we can't shoot the balloon down because it's nighttime. We want to see it during the day. I mean, you know, are you kidding? Thermal cameras, infrared, you know, every kind of thing in the world. They can see everything. They don't need the daylight to be up. It's most bizarre. But in any case, they let these things fly. let's take a look now at some of these reports, and then we'll go into the background of Montana, and then we'll take questions. Mm-hmm. How does that go? We're going to go, like I said, we'll go till about 11 o'clock. Is that
okay?
Okay, let's do that. Anything going on over there?
Shamanist Anamkara says, great big Stargate portal over Montana, maybe?
Yeah, it's starting to seem like something beyond ordinary explanation, shall we say. I don't think these are just government objects that are going on, but I think that they are running them side by side with whatever it is that's happening. That's where the confusion is coming from. Okay. Some things that were going on before. Three U.S. Air Force stratotankers have been spotted flying over Montana. Meanwhile, there are reports in media about a Chinese spy balloon over Montana. Remember? February 2nd, not so long ago. Although it was floating above commercial air flight paths, a two-hour ground stop was even issued Wednesday between Helena to Billings. They grounded the planes. That's very serious. That's 9/11 style activity. But if you think about it as a test, pretty good idea. So you might think, okay, well, they wrapped all that up and there's no debris, so we'll never know what the objects were, and we'll just, you know, fix those sensors and we'll never have this problem again. When the COG commander said, oh, we fixed the sensors now, we won't, you know, those objects will never get in again. So I see. We were sitting ducks there for 75 years and anyone could have nuked us, but thank God they adjusted the sensors. Unknown sightings in the sky increase around Billings. What's the date on this one? It's today. Well, that's Billings, Montana, isn't it? So why are you getting sightings increasing today? Well, if you take a walk through Twitter and news reports and everything else surrounding Billings, something interesting comes up. Now, here's an account that's called Kendra Dawn Sargent, and it's under Billings Classified. On my way home from work in Laurel today, I saw this stream in the sky. Then a bunch of emergency vehicles were turning around at the way station, heading back towards Laurel. Was there a wreck that anybody knows of that happened that way? This one's from yesterday. Then there are some other ones. Something definitely happening in Billings, Montana. An object seems to have dropped from the sky. Citizens reporting black SUVs everywhere. And there are a number of these reports. Now, some of the pictures that came up with these reports, and they did end up making it into local news finally out in Billings. Here is a shot of some of this debris just hanging out and coming down from the sky. Obviously, there is something still hanging out over there, but there's more. Here's a series of shots of the same object that they were trying to point out, and it's interesting to look at which side is up. Okay, just take a quick look at these, and I'll retweet them on the Twitter accounts, and some of them from the news stations out there in Billings, but they definitely are having a wave of something coming down in the last 2 days. Now, after this whole Chinese balloon nonsense that we saw going on, I think that account is called SLM Gentry 66. Now, what would be the reason we'd still be seeing these objects and they'd still be happening in the skies over in Montana? After all, hasn't the UFO panic abated? Apparently not. And we do have a lot of tweets about black SUVs showing up, and very often these can be recovery teams and, you know, those who make sure that nobody else gets there until the team shows up. So here's another one. So between Laurel and Park City, another UFO crashed out and there was a black SUV all over the scene. Weird. I left for work earlier. There were six or seven identical black Yukons lined up on Frontage Road. Obviously, that's a local. And again, you know, these are the types of things that they're seeing. So something, there's continued activity that's happening there. Now, what I pointed out was that the search for the shot down UFO debris over Lake Huron was just suspended because of low chance of recovery. So you can't even recover what you shot down? What is this? No. Either they weren't shooting at objects and this was an exercise, or the thing that they shot at was theirs and they knew it. And then we have the Chinese piece to contend with, which is the balloon itself, you know, the idea that the Chinese would send that in just for the heck of it and not thinking it would, you know, cause any problems is absurd. So it looks to me, and this is the basis of my analysis, that what's happening is this is a joint exercise between China and the United States, and that the original piece of it was. And that's where the whole balloon thing came from. And the idea was, if you have something in the sky, if you have, you know, this whole UFO piece, unidentified piece, and you get used to people thinking, oh, we have to shoot it out of the sky, then you can really bring in a UFO threat, because you can say, ah, do you remember in last February we had these unidentified objects, we shot them down, this is no different. So in fact, the extent of the test of the blue beam you saw on display, I kid you not, the UFO threat piece was all encapsulated there in a very small form. And they have basically the basis, the working model for it, just from those events that we just witnessed. And I'm going to show you how. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Special Report. We are live tonight on Saturday doing a special report after we did the show last night on this with Dr. Joseph Farrell. And just great analysis there by Dr. Farrell last night. Tonight, we're going in and picking up the pieces from what's happening now in the aftermath of this event. And what we see is that there's more going on in Montana than they originally mentioned. And they, you know, claimed, well, this whole thing is over and now we'll just tweak the sensors and we have a better handle on everything. But apparently there's a lot of stuff that's coming down in Montana and in places like Billings. And if you have information about this, definitely, you know, link it on Twitter and send it to us at admin@darkjournalist.com. We want to hear from you on it. Before I go any further, Miss Olivia.
Interesting. Montana Geology Tour says Tea Kettle Mountain, very active Sasquatch and UFO. The railroad crews see, quote, fleets of spaceships, personal accounts.
Interesting.
Maria Bellotti says, my ex-boyfriend was a mountain man who loved to go into government land in Montana where nobody was allowed. He heard Bigfoot once and his dog ran, not a scaredy dog either. That dog killed rattlesnakes.
Whoa. Well, I've met a few dogs like that, actually. Whoa. But if he's going to run, it's interesting. Pets, dogs in particular, seem to be very, very freaked out by UFO activity. And we know that in the original Roswell case, none of Mac Brazel's ranch animals would go anywhere near the wreckage. So there's like a strange subconscious understanding about whatever it is, the electromagnetic apotheum that's taking place there. They know, they sense, just like they sense when an earthquake's coming. Okay, bad enough to have it all going on in Montana, and I'm going to get into the history of Montana sightings and why they're using it as a major way station disclosure zone. Flying objects spotted over northern Pennsylvania. This is from today, again. No, I'm sorry, this is from February 15th. There is one from today also. Many people across the nation and in our region are asking, what is going on in the skies above the United States? People living along Page Lake say they've never seen anything like it before, and they are trying to figure out what the objects were. Page Lake is located between New Milford and Hartford. At this point, the answers are hard to come by. You can hear the stunned surprise in the voice of a man who was running near Page Lake Tuesday afternoon and saw something he described as unusual. He shot this video, and this looks very much like the October 13th, 2010 sighting to me from New York City, but it's a daytime UFO, and let's see if it even shows up there, but there are two basic lights balancing off against each other, which I find very interesting. That's a video that you can find, Northern Pennsylvania UFO, up on YouTube. Now, it's interesting to me because here we have flying objects spotted over northern Pennsylvania. We've got this whole wave around Billings and in Helena that are continuing, you know, in the aftermath of the shoot downs, supposedly. And then we have the Coast Guard halts Lake Huron search for debris from shot down airborne object. I do want to read this, actually, from Detroit. Federal agencies have suspended a search for debris from the unidentified airborne object that a military fighter jet shot down Sunday. Nothing could be recovered amid wintry conditions. We know that that's a complete lie. The U.S. Coast Guard, working with the FBI, called off the search in Lake Huron. Now, you get the FBI working with the Coast Guard. This is an unusual mix, I think, on this one, too. As a matter of fact, the presence of the FBI around any of the balloons is unusual. You would think that NORAD, the military, and possibly the Central Intelligence Agency would be involved. But the FBI, in fact, around the terrorism aspect, yes, but they would be more involved in establishing what it was first. The U.S. Coast Guard, working with the FBI, called off the search in Lake Huron for debris from the mystery object. North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD, said Friday night. On Thursday, Canada's Coast Guard and Royal Canadian Mounted Police suspended their search. That's the other thing, which they sent the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. It seems to me that's kind of a weak move for something like this. You know, it seems like you should send in your Green Beret, you know, special forces to find this thing. Who knows what it is, et cetera. It sounds to me like they knew what it was and they shot this down as part of a drill activity. But something else was happening that I think that these shoot downs are cover for. And I know that there certainly is a lot of speculation out there. I'm not trying to add to it. What I want to do is put us directly in the minds of the people who are pulling off the early stages of this drill, of this dry run of a UFO threat to activate and enact the emergency powers of the continuity of government program. If we get our heads in with their way of thinking, then we can see these events a lot differently than just saying, well, you know, balloon this or object that. We're going to be able to see it from the political standpoint of what they're trying to maneuver this and maneuver us into. So that will help. Of course, there was also confusion in the initial story about the balloon, and Van Herk took a lead role. And it's one of the reasons I'm focusing on Van Herk. I've been pointing him out for a long time because of his position, but now it's because of his actions. Here, he comes in and disputes Trump by saying, no, there were Chinese balloons during his administration. Well, Trump said, I never heard anything about balloons over the U.S. I would have shot them down. And we know Trump, he certainly would have. Now, they went and they talked to these defense officials like Mark Esper, and he said, no, there weren't any balloons, in fact. And now what's happening is the Biden administration is getting their officials to brief and retroactively brief these officials, former officials from the Trump administration, and say, oh, yeah, there was, you know, something around here, and we think it was the Chinese balloon, so that they get on board with them. So you have guys like Mike Pompeo, former CIA director under Trump, who was the guy who was trying to arrange, you know, for Julian Assange's assassination. Nice guy. He's also the guy who was in Trump's ear to get the Iranian general killed, which was a really bad geopolitical move and made us look terrible. So Pompeo is a real sneaky deep stater working in the background, and his presence in the Trump administration was cancerous. But what I will say about Pompeo, and he just, you know, it came out in a series of interviews recently defending the CIA's decision to block the JFK records. And I think it's significant that in the middle of his dribble about this and how we need to keep those records safe to keep America safe. No, to keep the CIA safe, right? That's what they've been doing with those records. But in the middle of it, he babbles and he says, I've also seen the JFK files. So this is a very unusual clip. I'm going to put it up on Twitter later tonight, but there's something strange going on with those officials getting rebriefed by the Biden administration. And I think a lot of it, of what we're seeing, is that they're trying to pretend this is a normal thing and, oh, it's always been going on, when in fact it hasn't. There hasn't been anything like this that has happened. And what they've been doing in the background with the UFO file and the heavy secrecy and the testing and the things of this nature, that's different, because we know they have been doing that for a long time. But to say, you know, we've had, you know, balloons and objects surveying our skies, you know, unless you're talking about satellites, there's nothing on the books about it. So, you know, please do tell. Here is that little exchange that I mentioned now, going back to General Van Herk, who, like I said here, got himself involved in the Trump story by lying. This was a lie that he put out. And here he lies again. Listen to this. So he's in the middle of a press conference, and they say, thank you. Let's go to Helene Cooper of the New York Times, who, like I said, launched the TTSA Elizondo story with Leslie Kane, which was 26 different falsehoods inside the story. Okay, so that's not journalism. It's somebody's idea of an op, which they tried to put across. Okay. Hi, thanks, Pat, and thanks for doing this. This is for General Van Herk, because you still haven't been able to tell us that these things, what these things are, and that we are shooting out of the sky. That raises the questions, have you ruled out aliens or extraterrestrials? And if so, why? Because that is what everyone is asking us right now. Okay, remember, she launched the TTSA op in the New York Times. So here's Van Herk's answer. He could have easily said, no, there are no UFOs. Here's his answer. Thanks for your question, Helena. Okay, her name is Helene. We're talking about Helena Montana here, but this is weird. Thanks for the question, Helena. I'll let the intel community and the counterintelligence community figure that out. I haven't ruled out anything. And that was the headline that went everywhere. Van Herk, COG commander, you know, NORAD commander, says he doesn't rule out aliens. This is the exchange, but who did it? It was Helene Cooper of the New York Times, embedded Pentagon through and through, launched the TTSA op. Cousin is the mayor of Helena, Montana, where they have all this UFO activity. And the NORAD COG commander, who would take over in a UFO threat emergency, that's the exchange that we're seeing on the ground. So those are the connections instantly that make this look like a setup. And then he said, at this point, we continue to assess every threat or potential threat unknown that approaches North America with an attempt to identify it. Yeah, except for balloons. You can't see balloons. All right. Now, what happens immediately after the Montana balloon thing happens there last week or 2 weeks ago? Well, it turns out the Space Force commander and the association founder goes to visit Malmstrom Air Force Base. And this is something that happens there. Now, I've pointed out that Chance Salzman is very important. I have a shot of him here. But again, a decade at Malmstrom Air Force Base. What is the signature of Malmstrom? It is where the UFO event happened in 1967. In famous history there for our friends in Montana. Let's read about it. It is UFOs and the Minuteman missiles. That's what happened. There were some guards on duty. A UFO shows up and starts knocking off the missile silos. All right. March 16th, 1967, Minuteman 1 missile shutdowns were reported at Echo Launch Facility. UFO activity was reported in the area. So 1967. Over a week later, missile shutdowns were reported at the Oscar LCF near Roy, Montana. The missiles LCFs were under the command of Malmstrom Air Force Base in Great Falls, Montana. Great Falls is very important and very close to Helena. Two guards above the Oscar facility, reported an orange-red ball-like object hovering over the launch pad. All missiles, 10. Under the control of the launch facility, became inoperable right after the UFO was reported. The implication, the UFO sighting sets up shutting down the missiles. Each of these missiles were mounted with a 10 megaton warhead. A subsequent investigation by Boeing Aerospace did not show any abnormalities, and there never was a loss of power. Similar shutdowns have been reported in 1966, Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota. Several civilian witnesses had reported UFO activity in Montana at the time of the incidents. Now, what happened is they came in with a committee, and the committee said, it's Condon committee, and their whole thing was to whitewash every sighting. So they said, we don't want to look into that. So they just left it there and then shut down Blue Book almost immediately after. There were several reports of UFO activity that triggered alarms at Ellsworth Air Force Base near Rapid City just before this incident. So it was right in this area that this thing was happening. Now, if we want to go even further back into history, there's a case of something that happened that took place Here's one. This is from 1966, and this is the drawing from the sighting, but this was spotted only 4 months before the whole Malmstrom Air Force Base incident happened. It was someone's house, and Mary Evans is the artist. I don't know where they feature this image, but I found it in relation to the story. Very interesting. It was just hovering out there, and the couple said it was there for 3 hours. How'd you like to have that thing just sitting out there in your backyard? So obviously the activity in that area, this is a wave, and we've seen these waves before when you get into West Virginia and the Mothman and all these types of things. You've got waves of UFO sightings that go with them. What is the nature of the wave, and are we in one right now? That's the question that we need to be asking. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show. Great to have you all with us. A terrific night in the ideas room tonight. We're going to be taking your questions shortly here. And like I said, we'll go till about 11, if that's all right with you, Miss Olivia. And Olivia, you're going to have questions for us in the second half. How's it going?
I'm gathering the questions right now.
How's it going out there?
Good. Ray Story wants to know, are hobby clubs flying $12 balloons a valid story?
No, complete smokescreen. And they're going to want to set up some absurdity. They're going to say, oh, you spent $500,000 shooting down a $12 balloon. These types of things. Oh, that stupid, incompetent government. So this is how they get out of saying, you know, we just ran basically a Project Blue Beam style operation, threat operation, and we're collecting details. Just like before COVID, you know, they had all these things going on. There were little training exercises, and we saw them doing the exact same training that they would for the actual events. Well, as I pointed out in Friday night's show with Dr. Farrell, 9/11 became very interesting and important for the amount of research that's been done by Farrell and Professor Scott and others about the amount of drills that were taking place on that day. One of those drills, which I got from Dr. Farrell's book, was called Bad Insider. And Bad Insider, you know, was a dry run through government systems about someone getting into the command structure. And it looks like somewhere the drill was hijacked because of the unusual things that happened. One of the things that's been pointed out by Dr. Farrell was the amount of calls that were coming into the White House switchboard during the 9/11 operation. And they were giving the exact codes for a number of different government agencies. So the government was on notice that they had been penetrated. In fact, one of those agencies that struck me and really caught my attention was the National Reconnaissance Office, or NRO. Now, remember, the NRO was something that was introduced in 1960, but the public didn't know anything about it. In fact, we didn't find out about their activities until 35 years later. So what I'm proposing really is that there's an NRO2 in action, and that it is committing a lot of these space incursions and things as part of this setup. And we don't know anything about this agency at all, as no one knew about the NRO while it was doing its highly sensitive work of satellite photography of the whole world and space. And God knows, in relation to the UFO file, that's where they built these levels of secrecy. So I want us to keep NRO2 and Bad Insider in mind as we go along here, because it's gonna come in handy as a reference point. Let's go back. Let's go even further back. 1940. Are you ready to go back to 1940? All right. There's a gentleman, you know, I wrote down the pronunciation of his name because I didn't want to get it wrong. Udo Wartena. And he was a Dutchman who had a UFO encounter in 1940 in a place that's very close to Helena in Townsend. And Udo's encounter took place mid-morning, early May 1940. 7 years before the Roswell incident, before Cape Girardeau, everything. At his mining claim in the forest near the base of Boulder Mountain, a short distance from Canyon Ferry Lake near the small town of Townsend, just a little southeast of Helena in Montana, Udo was a 37-year-old miner of Dutch origin working in the area part-time. During the previous month, he'd found a glacial deposit at the base of the mountain, which showed indications of a gold-bearing ore. This is where he spent all his time. While moving some large boulders, he heard a humming or droning sound, which he took first to be an aircraft, which flew over the area occasionally from Great Falls Base in the north. At first, Udo took little notice of the sound, 1940. But when the noise continued, he thought the vehicle had driven up, so he climbed up onto higher ground. A large disc-shaped object measuring 35 feet high and over 100 feet across was hovering a short distance away from the meadow where he had built his dam. Udo described it like two soup plates. Sounds almost exactly like the descriptions of saucers that we would hear about later. Udo described it like two soup plates, one inverted upon the other and resembling a stainless steel in color, although not as bright and shiny. As he stood watching, thinking at first it was an airship, the circular stairway with a solid bottom forming part of the craft's hull was let down, and a man descended, walking towards him. What's interesting is the man is wearing coveralls, which become the kind of fashion of the day for the Greys and everybody else, right? It's like coveralls all the way. But this is the first real incidence of this 1940 coveralls fashion statement. A large disc-shaped object measuring about 35 feet high and over 100 feet across was hovering in the short distance. Think about that, 30 feet high. So there's a whole exchange that takes place as he tries to describe this man. And the only thing that we really get is that he has very translucent skin. So he sounds almost like one of these tall whites that Charles Hall would describe later. The sighting itself is quite interesting, but again, it's the area around here that I want to focus on, which is the Helena area, which I'm going to do a sort of a crisscross between Helena, Billings, and Livingston. Now, Helena and Billings, you know, there's not so much distance. Livingston certainly further away, but I'm going to show you the maps on those. And I don't claim to be any particularly knowledgeable about, the geography in Montana, but I'm learning. So that's a very early encounter we can see. Would you like to go back even further? How'd you like to go back to 1870? All right. So in a mining, this is recently now in the last decade, in one of these mining, sort of leftover old mining shaft places, they discover a diary. And I have a little bit of this. I'm going to read some of it. This is from south of Dillon, site visit report, alleged 1870 UFO crash site. And I'll just give it to you as it is. And I suppose that the point person all this is someone named Warren Huxtable, who put this information across. But it was investigated, and apparently NASA tried to bully their way into the situation. Again, very close to Helena. Local treasure hunter Warren Huxtable came across a diary of an old stagecoach employee who said that a spaceship crashed August 14th, 1870. Remember the Cosmos Club? Keep this in mind. The UFO spaceship was moving to the southwest and crashed into the side of a mountain. Some debris and reports had been collected by Mr. Huxtable prior to our visit. Apparently, the debris was not collected at the alleged crash site, but downrange near Bannock, Montana. This debris appeared to be manufactured and was distorted, likely through a heat process. A materials expert analyzed the sample, but it was inconclusive. It was later determined that the debris was probably tool metal. Mr. Huxtable felt that the debris came from the crash while the ship was on its crash course. Mr. Huxtable drove us to the crash site, which was in a very remote area, well removed from the regularly traveled roads. And so they go into this. I think there's some people involved from MUFON as well. So what caught me is this, the strange visitors. During a conversation with Warren Huxtable in our ride to the site, he continually mentioned those NASA guys. In relation to his taking them to the site a couple of weeks before our visit, four men showed up at his house around 9 a.m. and demanded that he show them the site, that he ride with them as opposed to driving his own vehicle, which he proposed. Okay, the men were quite intimidating, but stopped short of issuing any threats. Warren's story was partially corroborated by another individual who called Warren when the men were there. Warren handed one of the men the phone and talked to Warren's caller. The caller told me that the men were very demanding and wanted to know his name, occupation, and what he knew about the site, etc. The man also told the caller to stay away from the site. The caller hung up on the man. Warren took the men to the site. They were there all day and did not allow Warren to observe their activities. Warren did see them set up several laser beams that they beamed across the gully. So there was some kind of a test they were going. When the men dropped Warren off, they said the meteor crashed there and he should stay away from the site because it was dangerous. The men drove an SUV with Virginia license plate. The vehicle had a NASA logo on the side. A few weeks earlier, Warren had received calls from people identifying themselves as NASA employees. So something is going on with this case. I'll get more. One of the people involved in the case, I'm familiar with the name, so I'll get more details on this. But I wanted to bring this out in relation to what's happening there now, because obviously, historically, a long track record of activity. And this is, according to the report that Huxtable put out, this is the nature of the terrain where it was, according to this diary that he found. And it seems to me that the diary and the story and the NASA story and the people involved are all on the up and up in relation to that. Now, so we have a 1940 case involving actually an abduction experience in Montana, close to Helena. Then we have this case, which goes even further back. It goes back into kind of the airship type period. So obviously Montana's been used for a long time for this purpose. Now, Montana, I've had a lot of interesting coincidences in my research around Montana over the years, and I've always wondered about it, aside from the fact that it's just, you know, beautiful and would seem like a lovely place to be. There's always something back there about this little mystery school Edgar Cayce reference that one day Livingston, Montana must someday feed the world. Cayce wasn't even being asked about the future of Montana. He was being asked about this guy's investments around, you know, different kind of farms and things in that area. And he just kind of goes and goes into this place when he's examining at that psychic antenna that he had. And he, when he gets to Livingston, Montana, he said, "This is a place that will involve many, many nations. And there's much to do with the world in relation to this." And later he will say, "In fact, Livingston, Montana must someday feed the world along with portions of South Africa." That's in Cayce Reading 3651 for those of you who like to keep track of the Cayce quotes. Certainly something very significant about that. Also, if you'll learn as you read the Cayce readings, when he's tuning in on that level and gets that kind of information and it's volunteered like that, there's a kind of a underlying significance if we can stay with it. So let's assume if it's to become the central hub and important to many, many places in the world, something about Livingston, Montana. Well, interestingly enough, someone was listening out there because in 1968, that reading actually came out. And even though he had done the reading in 1938, but it was just sort of hanging out there. And it came out in one of these books. And a couple of people who were very, very deep in trying to revive the mystery traditions around Saint Germain and others, Elizabeth Clare Prophet and her husband, Mark, took heed and they moved the Church Universal Triumphant Summit Lighthouse directly up there. Now, what's interesting is they took a great portion of the land and they did incredible, apparently great gardens and things of this nature. And they had a fairly large following up there. Then came a point late in the 80s where they were saying, "Oh, she's building, you know, bomb shelters and she's threatening that the Soviets are going to bomb and she's a cult leader." And they were really kind of leaning heavy on Elizabeth Clare Prophet. In retrospect, now, when I look back on it, I think of this as a little bit differently as I did initially. I actually think what they were trying to do was run her out because she was someone who had picked up on this mystery information about Edgar Casey.
I've got to stop you right now. So Arthur Preston says Star Trek's first contact happens with Vulcans in Montana.
Yes. Yes.
You knew that.
Yeah, it is very interesting, though. You're right. And that is that's a Star Trek, the Next Generation movie, isn't it? Yeah. Very interesting indeed. Wild. As I mentioned, Jesse Marcel, when he passed away as Obit, he'd been in Helena for 3 decades. And he was a great guy. You know, this is somebody who tried his whole life to figure out what it was that his father had seen and brought home for him to touch. And we know there were hieroglyphs on the panels that he saw. And, you know, he touched them as a boy and he remembered it. So he was trying to unravel the mystery of his dad's life. I wanted to get a couple of things clear. And again, I know the people of Montana, they know this geography way better than I will, but I'm going to just do it for the map purposes so we know what's going on. They claimed on this map that the distance between Great Falls, where the a lot of these UFO incidents are happening, and Helena is actually within an hour's distance. So I find that very interesting, and it gives us some idea. Livingston, they had from Helena a little bit different, about 2 hours out. So just to give us some idea of where we are. So now it's Mayor Collins, and they're running all these ET programs in the universities there in Helena. I mentioned this in the last episode. And he, of course, is the cousin of Helene Cooper, the embedded Pentagon New York Times reporter who launched the TTSA story and is now palling around with the COG commander talking about aliens. Now, this is interesting. In 1873, pre-statehood Montana, I've mentioned it twice, but here's just for the record. Pre-statehood Montana elected the first black mayor of any city in the territory of Montana with the election of E.T. Johnson, a black barber from Washington, D.C. But his name was E.T., literally, folks. Okay. Now, a little more. There was kind of an understanding, a basic understanding around people who were familiar with the Casey prediction around Livingston. It was just a small group of Casey people aware of it, and it made its way into a couple of newspapers, and we've got a prophet dreamed of Livingston, Montana. Edgar Casey said small town will be a world center. It was getting, it had got out there a little bit. It was getting mainstream that Casey had said something about Montana. And then we have Elizabeth Clare Prophet moving, as I said, all of her Church Universal Summit Lighthouse activity out of California up to Montana. Now, and her celebration of Saint Germain and the Ascended Masters, carrying on a kind of a theosophical trend, orienting it more to the Western initiators, but you know, second, third generation out from theosophy. Now, what's interesting also about Elizabeth Clare Prophet is she ran a great deal of UFO roundtables right there at Summit Lighthouse, videotaped them and sold the videotapes. Some of those experts who were there were people like Stanton Friedman. And when I, you know, when Stanton was with us and I had conversations with him, he was on the program on three different occasions. And it was just an amazing guy, an amazing, knowledgeable person. One of the things, though, that he remembered when I asked him about Elizabeth Clare Prophet was that she wanted every last detail related to UFOs. And she was absolutely obsessed with the subject when dealing with him. And if you think about it, her, you know, coming from this almost religious place, even though it was a mystery religious place, for her to be doing UFO roundtables in the middle of this, I think was particularly edgy and interesting. But we don't know the nature of what she was looking for in relation to this Livingston prophecy and the UFO piece from Stanton Friedman. Very interesting, I would say, and I think there's going to be a lot of answers there if we can go deep into her own understanding about what the ET experience part was all about. Okay. Let's go a little bit further on this. Oh, yeah. Now, I thought about this, too. Now, Jimmy Carter has been in the news because they say he's going to pass away, and he's in hospice care. And Carter's 98, and you know, he's lived a long life, and he's done a lot on the world stage. You know, of course, his presidency in many ways was a failed presidency, and he was a guy who had really a lot of bad luck in politics. But he's a very interesting character in a number of ways. One of the things that he was fascinated with was UFOs, and in fact, he reported on UFOs when he was governor of Georgia. He made his own thing. He said, we saw this thing. It looked like the moon. It hovered there. When I spoke to a group called the Transcenders that I've mentioned a few times, who I felt were doing some really kind of remarkable work before the guy, Rick Thurston, who was channeling them, passed away very suddenly after coming through with all these predictions about the October 13th, 2010 New York City sighting. He told me that Carter, in fact, had been taken aboard a craft and didn't remember it. That I found interesting. I kept it in the back of my mind until I listened to an interview with Shirley MacLaine about Jimmy Carter. And she was saying that Carter got in touch with her and said, I want you to come down to Georgia. And she said, what for? And he said, I'll explain it when you get here. So she shows up. She's not going to mess around. You know, she's already very, very new age and, you know, fascinated with ETs. And we all know Shirley MacLaine. Now she gets there and he says, what do they want? And she said, well, they want to kind of create the idea that war is futile because people will always be coming back again and again. And he said, do you mean to suggest that the ETs are going to introduce, like, are you saying it's reincarnation? And she said, yeah, basically. And he said, I can't continue the conversation. I'm born again Christian. I don't believe in reincarnation. So we're not going to be able to go any further on this. Nonetheless, Shirley MacLaine's account, he had her come down. That's pretty big. Well, there's another story, of course, floating around about Carter that when he became president, he still had a deal with George H.W. Bush as CIA director. And he asked him point blank, I want the UFO file and I want to see what we're dealing with. And Bush said, you don't have a need to know. I'm not going to give it to you. And if you have a specific need to know, let me know. And Carter considered it and said, it's unacceptable. And I'll tell you what you need to know. You're fired. So he fired him and got rid of him. Unfortunately, we got him back as VP just a few years later under Reagan, and he did a lot of shenanigans behind Reagan's back. But what's interesting is Carter had that. He understood that the UFO file was crucial, and he would place his friend Stansfield Turner into the CIA to get the UFO piece to him, and later would quietly say to friends in private, I wasn't able to get anything because they treated Turner like an outsider, even though he was the director. So this is an inside club dealing with ex-protect on the CIA UFO side. That's why it's very dangerous for us to take their disclosure plans at face value. And we need to kind of keep that in mind as we go forward. When you see the CIA lining up with NORAD, NORTHCOM, continuity of government people around a UFO threat, then, you know, that clock has just moved 1 minute closer. You know, they talk about the doomsday clock moving 1 minute closer to midnight. Well, I don't know about the doomsday clock, but the UFO threat op clock, the blue beam clock just went click closer to midnight. And so we need to keep a very close eye on this. Everyone, you're watching The Dark Journalist Show deep, deep with you tonight on Montana and the UFO file and fire in the sky. Where are all these sightings and Billings and Helena, Montana coming from, along with Pennsylvania now, we're seeing it as well. So this wave that we're in the middle of, the mainstream media kind of, you know, they touch upon it when they want to and they back off when they want to. Well, isn't that interesting? We need to follow it on our own without any input from the mainstream media, the Central Intelligence Agency or the false disclosure people like Elizondo and that, you know, Gary Nolan, who's high-fiving Dr. Fauci online. We don't need any of that in the UFO file research. Absolutely crucial to boot it out, in fact. So let's do this. Okay, in about 10 minutes, we'll take your questions. I have just a little more on this. I also wanted to round out the Casey piece, which is Casey suggested something that I think we need to look at in relation to the UFO file. And it's a little thing that's included when they were asking him about Atlantis. And of course, we've done a series of shows about Casey and Atlantis. And I think his information on Atlantis is about the best that you can get. Although I think that Steiner and Blavatsky and Theosophy, Henry Alcott, they do an amazing job of setting the stage. But it is Casey who comes home with, you know, the Atlantean readings. And we get the picture of Atlantis. You know, this is the updated. Here's the info for you because you're heading into the same period. And that's the gift, the kind of mystery gift of Casey's work. And we see a lot of circus shows around the Casey stuff too, you know, people coming out and saying, I'm Edgar Casey. And, you know, we have to really learn to read through the clown show, as it were. But the real Casey, his work has still not been examined properly. As at last count, as I understood it, only 22% of the actual Edgar Casey readings are out in books. So it's deep, deep material. And even the association, which I think does a pretty good job, even they are afraid, I think, of some of the implications of Casey's work all this many years later in relation to Atlantis specifically and the powerful, powerful predictions there. So in the middle of a reading that he's giving about Ezekiel, about Atlantis, I'm sorry, they mentioned to him, you know, is there a way when you're talking about these airships, because this is 1938, and they're thinking, okay, you know, we have planes and things of this nature, but what is it that's going on here? Well, they said, can you give us some idea of what these airships were like? You know, what did they look like? Can you give us a description? And he said, sure, you know, they're exactly what Ezekiel described, but when Ezekiel described them, it was a much later date. So here he is talking about these advanced airships that can fly not only in the air, but through things and underwater. So really advanced airships that the Atlanteans had. And he's saying, well, Ezekiel saw one. There's a description in the Bible, actually. So a lot of people have taken that biblical Ezekiel description of the wheels within a wheels and, you know, the multiple faces and that whole thing that he sees, and said, that's an ET ship for sure. Well, here's Casey saying, no, it's an Atlantean ship. But here's the weird thing. Atlantis is running those ships in about 10,000 BC. Ezekiel, we're looking more 2,000, 3,000 BC. So who kept the technology for 7,000, 8,000 years and was flying it around in Ezekiel's time so that when he sees it, it's so completely beyond anything he's seen that he thinks this is a, you know, a fiery chariot of God. Well, it's interesting, isn't it? And this is the nature of the blue beam exercise, if you think about it, and the nature of the threat paradigm involved. I'm not saying that Ezekiel wasn't a prophet, etc., and that he didn't integrate this story into his larger teaching. But just for the kind of the sake of what Casey was saying, that Atlantean technology sounds a whole lot like the ET technology that we're seeing years later. So as we've raised in the X series, did somebody preserve this information and these crafts and how to do it? And did they carry on in some kind of a parallel civilization along with us? And do they still have this, you know, technology? And is it something that we mistake for extraterrestrial technology over and over again? It needs to be considered. The off-world aspect needs to be considered as well. And the X technology used by the government needs to be considered as well. Yes, we have to walk and chew bubblegum while we do this because there's a number of possibilities that are moving in the same corridor. And that corridor is that they're in the time period where somebody is getting this information out and they're trying to catch up and kind of covet the narrative so that they can spin it in a particular way. But if you think about Casey's realization here that he's giving, well, someone has the Atlantean technology by the time Ezekiel is around. That's the takeaway from that particular exchange, which I think is profound. Another interesting takeaway from all this, when young Donald Trump is working with Roy Cohn, Cohn is shown through things like the Torbit document to have been associated with the Defense Industrial Security Command, a highly secret UFO file management group. And if he is the person who built Trump's political fortunes by plugging him in and knew where the bodies were buried in that deep state setup, then we're looking at when Trump arrives on the stage, it's not that they dislike him because he is this outsider and he's going to, you know, stand up to China and all the rest of it. I'm sure that they do because of his policies. But the thing that they are absolutely, you have to peel them off the ceilings over with Trump, is that he knows what they know about the UFO file. And that's dangerous because of his work, his uncle's work with Nikola Tesla and Vannevar Bush. That is now something we put on the record about Vannevar Bush had a protege, and the protege was John Trump, the scientist who lived close by, you know, only lived about 10 minutes from here. And he was the, you know, basically the protege of the dean of MIT, who was Vannevar Bush. So Vannevar Bush, then knowing everything about the UFO file and somebody who ran the UFO file for 18 years, according to the top physicist in the country named Robert Sarbarker. What did Robert Sarbarker say? Well, the UFO file passed through many hands. I'm surprised that they haven't talked about this already. He's giving this information now to a UFO researcher in the 1980s. And Sarbarker says, well, look, you know, we had this information. We studied the bodies. We studied the craft, you know, and Vannevar Bush was in charge of it. Then it went to von Neumann. But, the, you know, he had the whole lineage there of who ran the file. And this was crucial. Now, it's also interesting when we get around him, because his best friend was Thomas Townsend Brown. And, you know, when you think about the deep experiments that Brown was involved in, and of course, the fact that in the 50s, he tried to make, you know, flying saucer anti-gravity as well, then, you know, we're starting to realize, oh, these were the people who were working on these secret projects. The secrecy part got out in little bits and little rays through these people. So when we get into a geopolitical situation like this one, then we see somebody like Trump there with knowledge of the UFO file, love Trump or hate him, then we start to see the nature of this battle, the clash that's going on, is that they want to do Blue Beam, they want to do the UFO threat op, and they can't have someone there who knows what it actually is versus what they want to try to do with it. That's very, very dangerous for them. And there are deeper aspects also, because you have the Trump Space Force, which sits out there like a very strange piece, like, you know, a claim on the UFO file, in fact, by declaring space a warfighting domain, which, by the way, you know, I totally disagree with. And President Kennedy, when he launched the space program, gave it the central tenet that it was for exploration. And that the whole point was to keep weapons out of space, because he already knew, hey, look, you know, they're trying to get me into a nuclear war over Cuba. You know, do you want to put these things in space? You know, let's give humanity a totally different future. And all they're thinking of is the original Nazi plan in that leadership, which is, what did the Nazis want to do? They wanted the space platform to control things on the ground. That's what it was about. And the Nazis thought that they were connected with the ET aspect. So we need to look at this on a different level, and we're not going to get anywhere near to the truth if we are accepting the kind of pablum of the false Central Intelligence Agency disclosure as put forward by the COG commander. I mean, that is a recipe for dictatorship and disaster. So we need a totally different path on this. And my suggestion is real, true, hardcore study of the UFO file, including all the factors, the mystery school factors, the political driving factors, the technology factors, the psychic factors, and the alien contact, you know, contactee factor as well. They have to be included in there. You can't have this war, shoot them up thing. Let's shoot them out of the sky. That is the very small version of the UFO file that is in the heads of the neocons. And the UFO neocons got together this week. And what did they do? They put together a request with 16 senators And of course, Gillibrand and Rubio, again, that very strange combination, the two most blackmailable senators in the Senate. And they put together a request for more money for ARRO, A-A-R-O, the UFO Defense Office. This is what they want to do. So they've created it. Now they're like, hey, you've had these shoot downs in the sky. Give us money for the UFO Defense Office. That's how they're going to do it. And you're going to see people like Chris Mellon and Elizondo and Nolan all trying to be on the gravy train of this thing. And that is the, you know, that's the op that the Central Intelligence Agency put forward all the way back in 2017. But they've been working on it since 47. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. Okay, what we'll do, I have a couple more things. We're going to take your questions so we get out of here on time. Miss Olivia, I throw it to you. You're up.
Okay, first things first. Melody Lenz, if a release of high-tech suppression was unveiled in Montana equals feed the world, veiled reading?
Yeah. Okay. This is an important point. Maybe what Casey is saying is that this part of Montana becomes so important because somehow of this exchange of this advanced technology allows them to feed the world under difficult circumstances from Livingston. But he also says that Livingston will become a world center. Now, this is interesting because he made similar predictions about places that did come true. I remember he said that Virginia would become a major port city and all these things. And when he went to Virginia Beach, in fact, it was a fishing village. There wasn't much there at all. So he had that ability to see the geography and where it would lead. When he gets to Livingston again, it's not even that he's being asked the question. He's being asked about this guy's investments, and he's starting to consider what this guy is around because the guy is from Montana. And he says, well, you know, when you think about it, where you are there close by in Montana is going to be the center for many, many nations, and it's going to be a world center and, in fact, someday must feed the world along with portions of South Africa. Now, what's interesting is in another reading, he will pull that out again and he will say Saskatchewan and parts of the Pampas region in Argentina will also be part of this sort of huge food distribution piece. So there could be advanced technology involved with that, but Montana, he pinpointed it directly. And that was the same thing that our friend Elizabeth Clare Prophet picked up on and moved the Summit Lighthouse there directly for that reason, because she knew that Casey was a mystery school initiate. Yes.
Steiner to God. DJ, do you believe in the so-called Casey map is a likely reality? And if so, how far in the future?
Well, you can study them and make your own map. This is the thing. And I do think that the earth changes that he mentioned, you know, are part of that shift. But one of the things that we need to remember is, as he said, land would be going down in certain places. And he said the upper portion of Europe would be changed in the twinkling of an eye. That's pretty quick. But he talked about how Georgia would disappear and how California would be destroyed by earthquakes. So these are predictions that have yet to come to pass, but it makes you wonder. But those earth changes are all part of the greater change of humanity and everything that we're going through. And remember that with them is the idea that we would actually see land rising. It's often left out. And it's especially left out when you get to the whole climate cult frenzy that's been going on. They're like, oh, those coastlines are going to go underwater, you know, the water's rising. We're all, you know, in for it. And you need to pay these carbon credits in order to save the planet. And Al Gore is freaking out. Maybe Al Gore's on Storm too, because he freaked out at Davos. And of course, someone remarked about John Kerry earlier, and that he said, we're all extraterrestrials here and we're advanced.
Havardian.
Yeah. I mean, think about that. So Kerry saying that, you know, those two things in the same sentence, that he thinks that, you know, we are advanced people, that is we at Davos, and then that we are extraterrestrial. I mean, it's a weird, weird thing to say. How do you even explain that? And these guys are in politics. They know their words are going to be scrutinized. So they very rarely say things that they're not supposed to. But I would definitely say that Land Rising is something I try over and over again to get people to pay attention to, because it is happening everywhere. And it's happening in the South Pacific. It's happening in the Atlantic, according to Casey. And the land that's rising is off the coast of Bimini. And that's what so much of the shootout in the hot zone is all about. But that's another episode. Yes.
Alien scientist Jeremy Corbell on CNN a week before the balloon op. Just a coincidence?
Well, Corbell is like, you know, he's like the clown. He's like the circus clown. And he needs to kind of come out and do the clown bit. What happens with somebody like that is, you know, they go on Fox News, they go on CNN, and they say UFO expert. Okay, so first of all, how do you even become a UFO expert? This guy made a film about Bob Lazar. And before that, he was a condo guy. He like ran a condo. So he's not a UFO expert. He's probably somebody who is a UFO enthusiast. And so he got on this thing with George Knapp. And George Knapp, you know, it's tough to look at his career because he brought forward things in the 90s and in the 2000s. And then he got involved with Bigelow and TTSA and Elizondo and DeLong. And, you know, that's all CIA wash. So I don't know. I don't even know how to comment on somebody like Knapp. But now that he's wrapped up with Corbell, forget it. And they're there at CNN's, you know, saying, oh, CNN wants to get to the bottom of this, and that damn government better give us the truth, when all the people around them feeding them this false information are all government people. Elizondo's government, you know, Gary Nolan is CIA, over a decade of CIA. I mean, come on, these are government people. So that damn government, you know, this whole thing, Elizondo is an ex-Pentagon fighter. You know, he never left the Pentagon. He's not ex-anything. So that's a joke. That was a narrative. And so we have some people in the media. Let's say there are good people in the media. Let's say, like, you know, even Megyn Kelly and Tucker Carlson were trying to do something, and they're like, we're covering UFOs and stuff. And they bring in all these CIA people to talk about the subject. That's the problem that I have with it. They do not have the background and the information on it. So someone like CNN working with Corbell, they can create a whole phony setup, basically, of like, you know, CNN wants to get to the bottom of the UFO thing and really milk it. And this guy, you know, is dropping F-bombs every 2 seconds about it. It's a, you know, it's basically, it's to downgrade the whole thing. That is the exact opposite of disclosure. It has nothing to do with disclosure at all. It's a circus marketing freak show. Thank you, alien scientist, for that question. Yes.
Jason May, DJ, what do you think of Jack Sarfati?
Well, Jack's an interesting guy. He tells an interesting story. He's an interesting scientist. And his story is that some time travelers called him on the phone when he was 13. And they told him, we're calling you from a ship in the future. And that the ship that they're calling him from, he knows how the Tic Tac works. And his stories are pretty wild. But I do feel like, you know, he has a lot of intelligent things to say. So, you know, he's been around. I've been in, he hasn't been on the show or anything like that, but he certainly is an interesting person. Yes.
D Gage wants me to read this. There was another thing that blew up in the sky in Billings on Friday. People from all over the town were posting on Facebook, and the comments were shut down. Many posts were deleted.
Oh, interesting. Huh. If you have anything, if you have any screenshots or anything of that nature, you can send them to me or post them on Twitter and just send me the link at Dark Journalist at Twitter. That might be the best way to go, or do admin@darkjournalist.com. But I would like to see that. I read some of those and showed some of those. We know that it's happening. In Billings, it's happening. There's no doubt about it. The local news station reported on it. I think it's KTVU. And I read their report, which was exactly like the tweet. So it's not like someone just made this stuff up. You know, it's there, it's being covered, and it's happening. One of the ones that I read was that on my way home from work in Laurel today, I saw the stream in the sky, then a bunch of emergency vehicles. So what is it? You know, even the news reporters were like, we don't know what it is. By the way, on the Pennsylvania one, when I watched the video on it from the news story in northern Pennsylvania, there was a helicopter chasing those two lights. So, you know, it seemed like they didn't know what it was, you know? So I think you have levels too of exercises. This is why, and I point this out, you know, somebody said, well, the TTSA, these people went on the record who were Navy pilots. Don't you think that TTSA is good because of Navy pilots? It doesn't work that way. You know, TTSA would have used anyone that they could to move their narrative downfield. And it doesn't mean that Navy pilots have to be in on it or anything like that. But look, the Navy pilots like Ryan Graves and guys like that, first of all, I have a problem with Graves because he's a defense contractor. So he's not just like a Navy pilot who has a dispassionate interest in this. He's like, I want disclosure. I want the UFO office and all that stuff. But you have to say, well, all right, you're a defense contractor. Will you put in writing for all of the things that you do, the speeches you give and the appearances that you give, that you aren't going to try and create yourself as a UAP defense entity, defense contractor, and be on a gravy train for that, it, you know, because you want to tell this story? Is it okay for you to go on the record and say, I'm not going to sell my services as part of this promotion? I think that there has to be some kind of ethics involved. Otherwise, you know, it looks like a conflict of interest for anybody involved with that. But you can have a Navy pilot who they've decided, hey, we're going to run, you know, a test on, and we're going to show him this advanced technology and see how he responds to it. And then he's going to come away and be like, I just had this experience with this thing. I couldn't, you know, figure it out. So therefore, I don't think that somebody like Graves has to be, I would never say they're a liar or anything like that. But there's a lot of explanations for what happened with him. The other thing is that Navy pilots have been seeing UFOs since the 1940s or before, you know, so this is nothing new. And I think, of course, we have a problem with the UFO file, that this is obvious, very clear. And in that sense, I'm on the same page with people who want to bring it forward. The problem is that it's been mixed. So there's been pollution from people who want disclosure versus the CIA threat piece, which wants disclosure to cause a UFO threat emergency powers, a situation that can cause the enactment of the continuity of government. It's totally different motivation. And you can imagine people freaking out very, very heavily, thinking that there's a UFO threat, and they would throw themselves in the arms of this NORTHCOM commander. We need to be aware enough on the ground, like with the COVID thing, you know, this is another op to centralize power because they can't get power from traditional channels. How many elections can you fix? You know, I mean, it becomes a problem at a certain point. So you need central authority and power from the enactment of emergency powers. What did Justin Trudeau do in the middle of the trucker revolt? He pressed the emergency button, the emergency thing. Hey, get these tanks, roll them down the street and get these truckers out of here. That is, you know, that's where they're coming from. And they put him in the middle of that phony UFO exercise and be like, I shot down a UFO. That's not good. That's not good. You know, Justin Trudeau has to be one of the biggest weasels on the world stage in relation to politics and what he's doing there in Canada. It's just a disaster. So he's a real World Economic Forum puppet. Those are the last people you want around something as important as the UFO file.
He's a weasel, but it's not adequate enough, an insult.
no, I know. I could do a whole show on Justin the Weasel. But I think that we pointed it out. Yes.
Okay. Neil Bauman, what about MUFON taking down its case reports?
I need to know more about that and how substantiated it is. It would be, if it happened the way that it's been tossed around, then it's really weird. But I've never relied on MUFON. I think there are good people, and like, where do you go, really, if you are interested in the UFO file work? What do you do? You can do your own research, I think that that's an excellent way to go, but you want to do it with other people. And so the groups that are there and established, you know, like MUFON or something like that, would be a natural place to go. Unfortunately, the leadership around MUFON hasn't been, you know, any great shakes for a long time. So I think there needs to be a whole different approach. I think that the UFO file research is going to split off from the UFO sideshow thing. And I think that the UFO file people who do really good research, you know, and you have guys, I think, out there who do substantial things. Stan Gordon is a great researcher for many years. But they took the core of the what was left of the UFO field and they converted them all into TTSA cheerleaders. And that was the end, really. You know, how do you get that kind of credibility back? It's a good question. You should, you know, immediately in light of the UFO threat thing that they've rolled out in the past 2 weeks, denounce the Central Intelligence Agency work inside the UFO community and move away from the threat people and go back towards UFO file work. Otherwise, you're just pandering for this establishment. And I can't imagine anyone, you know, if you're in the truth-telling business and you don't tell the truth, you just get out of the business. You know, there's a lot of other stuff you can do. But I don't think that the idea of being in a disclosure truth thing and then pandering to the, you know, CIA, COG narratives, you know, at the end of the day, you're going to have to look at yourself in the mirror. And, you know, it's just not, you know, it's not worth it. And the thing is, what's interesting also is look at how the CIA treats people too. It's like they throw them by the wayside as soon as they're done with them. So, and think even of somebody like Tom DeLonge. I mean, you know, they needed a Bobo for that situation. And that's what he was for them. And everyone looks at it now and they're like, oh yeah, he was a Bobo. But I'll tell you, for the first 2 or 3 years that he was out there with that stuff, when I came forward with the CIA thing, they said, oh, you're paranoid, you know? And you had really big UFO researchers and stuff saying like, you know, oh, he's got to be paranoid because he doesn't believe in TTSA and the great disclosure, because they were thinking, oh, we're going to get books and movies and documentaries, and finally people are going to accept what we have. It doesn't work that way. The CIA is not going to be your retirement plan. It doesn't work, you know. Stick to truth telling and that'll be its own reward. You know, good things come to those who wait. Yes.
Brett, remember the huge angry baby Trump balloon that was flown when he visited the UK? Maybe the CIA has balloon manufacturing divisions for when they need to spice up their covert terrorist operations.
Whoa, that is edgy. That is very edgy.
And See the Mark responded, NASA is the world's largest consumer of helium.
Oh, that's interesting. NASA plays into this as well because I think you have divisions for how they're going to run this threat. They've decided at different times when they got into trouble over the UFO threat part that, you know, when they played it out there and it looked, it was becoming obvious. And we were giving them pushback that other people were picking up on. So like, you know, let me tell you something about the ideas room and just the fact of getting this conversation going, you know, and when you have people of the caliber of like Gigi Young and Dr. Farrell, you know, and others coming forward, John Warner is the son of Senator Warner, bringing this pushback against that narrative has a hard time getting off the ground. And Washington, they slap themselves on the back and say, we got a UFO defense office. And, you know, they have a whole downline for that. But in fact, the truth of the matter is, you know, we, one man armed with the truth constitutes a majority. We know, and we can see through the continuity of government play and the CIA UFO threat and what the street legend is, blue beam, as it were. It's a good catchphrase. So, you know, for me, that's important. And you can feel that they can't quite pull it off with that element in there. And I think a conversation like this, like we're having here in the ideas room, is absolutely the reason why they had things like, hey, social distance, don't talk to each other, stick a mask on your face and all that stuff. This is part of it. It's part of the mentality. Because when we get together and share these ideas, we move the conversation to a different level and nobody is as smart as all of us. Yes.
Deborah Krulovich, question. Sounds like DJ is talking about the bad guys, COG, but we have heard currently, we are currently in a good guy COG with Trump as CIC and COG in Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado. And OBS 99 says, so please clarify, what does Trump and the deep state both know about the UFO file?
Yeah, well, the second question first, because the first one, unfortunately, is not a very good answer. I think whatever it is in relation to the secret aspect, in my opinion, around the UFO file, and I've gone through all the cases, talked to all the experts. There's a thing inside the UFO file which has to do with X technology, and the effect is called apotheosis. Throughout all the reports I read today, the 1940 report about the guy who had the abduction case in Montana, in Helena, Montana, he couldn't get up afterwards. And he said the air seemed disturbed. These are apotheosis effects. The aspect of the ET piece brings in this apotheosis thing, which they simultaneously lust after in the deep state, but are also afraid of it because it can sort of boomerang back on them. It's a very unsteady effect. And the only thing I can say about apotheosis is that it is a reality distorting physics. And, you know, we've heard Dr. Farrell talk about torsion physics. And I think at one point he said, when you get deep into that, it makes the atomic bomb seem like a firecracker. So that's a very, when you think about that, that's starting to get our head into it. I think a good way to think about apotheosis and the way that I've come around to it is like this, that all those things that we've heard about in these cases, when people are abducted by aliens and they're taken through walls, through ceilings, through cars, and time is stopped, they're missing time, and you know, the electricity won't work. I was just reading about cases in Montana, I think I still have it here, about power plants going out just from UFOs flying over them. The power plants go out, and those are recent too. So yeah, I have one here. This is from 2015. This is a good example of apotheosis. You ready? The website, November 18th, 2015, someone reported seeing three flashes of green light that lit up the entire sky after a power outage. This is in Helena, in Great Falls. On November 11th in Great Falls, someone reported seeing silent triangular object heading east to west before turning smoothly south and going out of sight, massive in size. On September 26th, someone in Great Falls reported seeing a green glowing fireball. Now, what happens when they go and query around this is they find out that the power goes out. And in some cases, the power goes out for 48 hours. That is an apotheosis effect. It's an impact. And, you know, when you see these types of things, when they run this stuff, they may not know what's going to happen during certain types of tests. They might not be the entire master of the apotheosis technology, but they know so much about it, and they've left the entire culture behind. So we live in a kind of a schizophrenic situation where a very small group on the inside is operating with very deep knowledge about this advanced technology and other things. So therefore, the deep state knows that piece through what I call the X-Protect group that handles the UFO secrecy. But Trump may be on the same level with them knowledge-wise, because John Trump worked for Vannevar Bush, and Vannevar Bush handled the UFO file for 18 years and was the deep, deep inside guy. And he's the one who set up Trump's uncle, John, to go get the Tesla papers. So that stuff, we just know it. It's part of the history. There's no debate around this. Vannevar Bush, we know his protege was John Trump. One, two, we know he set him up to go get Tesla's papers. And three, we know that Vannevar Bush handled the UFO file because of Robert Sarbarker. You don't need MJ-12 or anything. Sarbarker said it on the record twice. So Sarbarker was a physicist who worked with Bush. And he was like, look, you know, yeah, I'll tell you what you want to know about UFOs. Vannevar Bush had the UFO file. That makes a lot of sense. So if that lines up with something like MJ-12, fantastic, you know, but you don't even need MJ-12 to prove that piece. So since we know that, we can bring those pieces in together, and we can say that John Trump was on a pretty deep level with the UFO file. And so then it just becomes a question of how much did he share with his nephew? And by the peel them off the ceiling reaction to Trump, it seems like he shared a lot. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show Okay, we'll just take a couple more questions. It's great to have everyone in the house tonight. Fantastic show. Great show last night with Dr. Farrell. We'll have part two of that for you very soon. We have Gigi Young, part two of her episode coming up as well. And we are going to have John Warner, the son of Senator Warner, next week as well. And absolutely fascinating things that he has to say. And of course, his cousin is Chris Mellon, who is right now in the middle of launching this whole UFO threat infrastructure and Arrow with Lou Elizondo. And of course, John Warner is not very happy about that. Yes.
Okay. Simone Nyman, combining an alien invasion with worldwide cyber attack would be an ideal scenario for COG, would it not?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I think they have three main pieces that they're working with. In fact, I think that the simulation of a nuclear incident is something that they've considered, but I think it's a messy proposition. I think that the UFO threat thing, they've built up so that a portion of this group on the inside thinks that they can pull it off. But they seem to be worried about something in the machinery, somebody, something that's watching them. and then the cyber attack, you know, this is how I think they go back to, you know, we have a new internet and only good people can be on that internet. And by the way, you know, here's your vaccine to get on the internet. So, yes, I think consider all the different possibilities. A lot of the things that I'm focusing on, you know, we have a gigantic biometric transhumanist system weighing down on us, trying to calculate us and plug us into the smart city system. You have an environmental disaster in Ohio going on as we speak from the gigantic spills that have taken place. And the infrastructure of America's food processing is under attack. There's no question about it. So we deal with a number of different problems. Since this episode is Fire in the Sky, we're looking specifically to how the UFO threat, continuity of government handshake goes together and how the CIA has spent this time developing this threat and the media has been complicit and suddenly loves to talk about UFOs. You noticed during the whole flap, they didn't mention UAP once because UAP is a dud and it was a dumb attempt to rebrand UFOs in their image, just like when they say homeland instead of the United States. Because if you just say homeland, it can be anything. The United States has attributes. Names are important. The Constitution, you know, the United States has the Constitution. I don't know what homeland has. What does homeland have? you know, homeland has regional governors with a central COG commander. I mean, you know, NORTHCOM didn't even exist. I try to explain this to people, and, you know, I consider myself lucky because I spent so much time, you know, in my teens and 20s reading Professor Scott's work, you know, and I think Professor Scott, who after all is on the left coast, he's a Berkeley professor, you know, this isn't anybody playing favorites. He understands the nature of the danger of a government with too much power, and he's not pointing it right or left. You know, he is somebody who you would say would be more on the left, in fact. But there's so much information. He understands the government so well. And he gave us that focus on the continuity of government by pointing out that it is the one area in government that we never get to see and that is under such a level of heavy, heavy secrecy. And immediately, you know, it opens up, well, who's running that? Who has access to it? Who has the channels around it? And one of the wonderful things that Professor Scott brought forward is that every time that we have a deep event in the United States, whether, you know, if you go back in history, the Kennedy assassination, it involved a direct use of the Doomsday Network, you know, the emergency communications network. And it was used by Secret Service agent Winston Lawson, who Professor Scott pointed out lied his head off in his testimony about setting up the route for President Kennedy to be ambushed in Dallas. And then if you go a little further into Watergate, you're going to find John Dean had just come out of working for COG when he went to work for Nixon as his lawyer, that one of the major burglars involved in the Watergate case had just come out of working for emergency management planning inside COG. So there we have all these COG people, the October surprise in 1980, Iran-Contra, you know, you've got Ollie North setting up a whole new protocol for COG, and now it involves putting together an entire group of people to be rounded up in the event that COG, they press the COG button. And those are all people that they would have problems with. And then they decide, well, you know, there's another problem that we need to work on that we can work into COG. And one of the, you know, one of those problems is dissidents, people who disagree with our position. And in the situation, like a warlike situation, we want to round those people up. So they put together databases of people to do that with. And that whole thing, you know, everyone thought, oh, that was a product of the 80s or whatever. It turned into Maine Corps. And as of 2011, we know that there was an entire system that was still developing that whole time. So all through the 90s, after the Cold War, Soviets fell and all the rest of it, you know, COG just went underground for a little bit. And, you know, it continued on. As a matter of fact, the continuity of government got activated on 9/11. For a very brief time, we don't know the entire circumstances around it, but that's in the report. So we got the COG emergency, we got NORTHCOM, so it sets us up 20 years later to be in this situation, to be talking about very unconstitutional possibilities. You know, the same way in 1963, President Kennedy got behind 7 days in May because it set up the possibility that there was this general, the COG general out in Roswell, who was going to take over the government by staging, you know, there was a weak president who wasn't standing up to the Russians. I mean, sound familiar? You know, the COG piece is hanging out there, has been for a long time. And these people inside the government, the ex-share people that I call them, the one who wants to move the football down the road and have the culture move forward, you know, the President Kennedys, these types, they don't want to see civilization, you know, go over the edge because of a few madmen at the top driving the system for power. You know, they want to see the right outcome. That's exactly why President Kennedy didn't want weapons in space. Yes.
Karen Carpenter, are we in another live exercise? And Wendy Eater, has the fake alien invasion been timed to an imminent financial collapse?
Well, they talk about financial collapse a lot. And you understand the way that they're doing things and trying to get everyone into this digital system. It's to protect themselves from the system that they have. But the independent... they have an independent office that looks at the budget. It's supposedly independent. But one of the things that they did recently is they said the United States will add some 20 over the next 10 years, will add $19 trillion in debt. Okay, so the process that they're on, that we're on, is completely unsustainable. But what happens in relation to this? When we have situations come up, for example, the governor in Ohio with the latest spill that happened, the environmental disaster that's ruining those people's lives, they asked President Biden for an emergency declaration. He wouldn't give it to them. But you know what he announced on the same day? That he was going to start guaranteeing Ukrainians pensions. Now, whatever the job of the United States is, it is not to guarantee Ukrainian pensions at all. It is to look out for our own backyard so we can be in a position to help other countries. And if you want to say, well, you know, I don't want the Russians to roll all over Ukraine, fine. But you don't send them $100 billion every few weeks. I mean, so it's becoming an absolute disgrace. We know it. And Ukraine is such a criminal cesspool in the leadership. And the people, you know, are fantastic. But we need to kind of work more with the people on the ground and not the corrupt leadership on the top, which is driving them into war after all, and driving them to the brink of nuclear war, which is insane. You know, where's the peace process ever talked about? You know, they're like, oh, we have to be careful not to ruffle feathers with China over the balloon. But then they're like, oh, yeah, but we're going to roll tanks, you know, to blow away some Russians who are coming into Ukraine. I mean, the peace process needs to be in Russia. You know, let's start there. You already have a war going on. How about that? You know, but you have a terrible team at the top. I don't mean to be pessimistic, but you'd have to get rid of, you know, Anthony Blinken to start with. I mean, this is a ridiculous, no results Secretary of State, is one of the worst people on the ground. And, you know, the whole Biden administration is corrupt. So you need a new administration. I'm going to tell you something very strange, and I don't believe in any of these types of stories, you know, that the election thing would be thrown out in court, whatever. But there was an actual news story that the Supreme Court was looking at listening to a case that involved the 2020 election and the shenanigans that had gone on there. That's pretty interesting. So the fact that that came up, I think, is interesting, and it sets a prelude for the 2024 battle, which I'm going to tell you, you're going to have some very exciting reports coming up on 2024. And for people who tell you, ah, the presidential election doesn't matter, they're totally wrong, because you have a body politic, and the president is the head of that system. And you need, you know, it's great to have a good body on the ground in relation to a political setup, but you need the head to operate the entire thing. And the president is the head of the body politic. So the election of the president is absolutely important. And we're finding out that, you know, from Stepford Biden and all that, just what a disaster this country can get into in a short period of time with the wrong person at the helm. Everyone, you're watching the Dark Journalist Show. I want to remind you, if you're new here and if you haven't already, please go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter. That is a free newsletter, but it keeps us in touch, and it lets you know the incredible interviews that we have coming up for you, and a remarkable X-Series episodes, including the five-year anniversary episode of the X-Series coming up in about a month. And that's going to be a good one, I guarantee you, a great two-part episode, as well as some exciting events that we're going to have for you. Let's take the last question, Miss Olivia.
Samar. Thoughts on Senator Kennedy saying, lock your doors.
Well, I will say this, just as, you know, somebody watching the way that all those people came out of the classified briefing a couple of days ago, and Senator Kennedy from Louisiana, you know, looked particularly disturbed, and then at the end of it said, lock your doors at night. So, you know, that's his little message there. And it seemed to me that guys like Rubio and all the rest of it, they were using the same fear factor to try to drum up money for the UFO Defense Office. And, you know, you had Senator Gillibrand high-fiving Chris Mellon and stuff. Those people, you know, Gillibrand has her own sketchy past with the NXIVM cult, and that's dicey. And then her,
what is her relationship there with the NXIVM cult?
Well, her family was involved with the NXIVM cult. Okay. And her husband was their lawyer. So, and then his dad was the head of British Aerospace. So you know, you're getting a direct link. And then, you know, she ran for president. She was Hillary's you know, in 2020, she was you know, she'd been Hillary's pick to run for senator previously, and that's how she got in. And then she had run for president, but she didn't pick up the traction in 2020 because of the NXIVM questions. And, you know, she's welcome to come on here anytime and talk about that stuff. What I want more than anything is for these people to get away from the threat idea and to fund research into the UFO file and to get the X-Protect group disassembled, and to get the real records of the UFO file, the Kennedy assassination, and the deep, you know, secrets inside the government. The only way the government can move forward is not behind the wall of secrecy and not with false CIA disclosure. The other thing is the CIA, you know, it has to be dealt with on a real level. And that involves, you know, when they're doing these meetings and they're having these investigations in Congress, you have got to go to the Central Intelligence Agency and tell them to release the records that they hold in relation to a 60-year-old crime that they participated in. I mean, you can't get, how can you get any clarity as a country or really achieve a level of transparency if you're still holding that secret? And remember that President Kennedy was directly involved, and his assassination was directly involved with the UFO file. That's crucial. and it can't be missed in the hubbub about people, you know, running away with headlines and being like, Tucker Carlson said he solved the CIA involvement, and then Tucker Carlson doesn't produce anything. Well, I'm glad he mentioned it, but, you know, that was basically a false story that nobody got anything from except a bunch of headlines. And they were like, you know, oh, they admitted that the CIA killed Kennedy. Doesn't do you any good if you, you know, you don't have the government bringing it forward and pressing the government because the public demands it. And so instead, you just get a bunch of weird clickbait headlines about Tucker Carlson. That's not good. And they're treating the UFO file that way, too. They're like, ooh, you know, Van Herk said UFOs. What they should be reporting is COG commander, you know, hints at takeover and martial law because of a UFO threat. That's the headline. If you're really running an honest news organization, not weird titillation about, you know, oh, we shot down an object, you know, and Van Herk, like he wouldn't leave, you know, he wouldn't leave any option off the table. So they have to stop playing around with it. What it is, the people inside the media organizations, and I've worked for some of them, they like to adopt and co-opt an astroturf. So they like to grab areas of interest that the public has. When they found out that the top search in 2017 was UFOs, they knew they had to co-opt the whole thing. And they did. To a large extent, about 95%. So, you know, but they don't give you the real version of it. They just use your own interest as a distraction against you. So the way to get to the truth is to work with people who are trying to get at the truth with you. And I think that's something that we can do here. And we do it in the Ideas Room. My hat's off to you there in the Ideas Room and to you, Miss Olivia. All right. And with that, I think our special report is over, but we're coming up. We're probably going to have more special reports this week. I mentioned the John Warner interview. And of course, we have Joseph Farrell part two, and we'll be back also next Friday. What do you got there?
Well, I'm going to ask you, there are a couple of really great questions that I didn't get to. Could we
sure.
for another 10 minutes?
Well,
5 minutes?
Yeah, let's just get them in there. Sure.
Okay. Rehoboth Farm. There's logically another alternative regarding the recovery. They may have recovered them and don't want us to see the wreckage. What better way is there not to show us? Navy fighter pilots are also pretty deep into the security / classified world, too. They would definitely lie for a matter of national security.
Well, counterintelligence agencies, agents lie. That's what their job is. So when you see counterintelligence people coming out and saying, I'm a whistleblower, you know, they could be on a mission. For sure. I think I pointed out that the people, the Navy pilots that were involved in the last wave of false CIA disclosure don't have to be lying. They could have these different tests run while they're, you know, somebody could run the Tic Tac test on them and they were like, oh my God, you know. And if you look at those cases, in fact, a number of them, what they say is, you know what? I actually, I was on a drill when this happened. You know, Graves was on a drill, for example, during his sighting. And what you have to watch for is conflicts of interest. So as I mentioned with someone like Graves, he's a defense contractor. That's different. You know, so if I'm a Navy pilot and I have a story to tell you, well, you know, I might have a story to tell you and I might share that in a book and they might make a movie out of it and I might, you know, reap the rewards of that. There's nothing wrong with that. But if I offer a service like defense contracting, and then I have a story about seeing a UAP, and then I offer a UAP defense service, and I become the poster boy for the thing, that's a real conflict of interest. And I don't care who you are or what phony UFO defense office you're setting up. You can't have people like that, you know, doing that. I mean, you're going to have to establish some kind of code of ethics in relation to it. The same thing with Elizondo. You know, he had a whole sky thing, you know, defense contracting division type idea. I don't know where these people, you know, you're not going to be able to ride the public on this and then collect the profits in the background. I mean, you know, it's not possible. Maybe with the kind of flighty UFO people you've been dealing with, it's possible. But think of the last 4 years of work that we've done around the TTSA issue and the CIA push around the UFO threat. I mean, you're not, that material's out there. You know, people in the ideas room have heard it. You know, you'd like it to get out to a wider and wider audience, but it works. You know, I mean, this is a foundational thing. And so for my money, I think that when you get to this, you need exceedingly honest people around the UFO file piece. And if you can't, you know, if they don't want to tell the truth, then get into some other business. Look, Wall Street needs a lot of guys who can live on that slippery lane, you know? And so go for it there. I mean, why be a hypocrite? Yes.
Okay, this is a bunch all on the same topic. Gene spliced. Didn't Governor Keating's brother work at a holographic projection company tied to Bluebeam? Chloe Black, the holographic tech is sophisticated and will fool anyone susceptible to the I want to believe mentality. Jack Reacher, can aerosolized aluminum particles be utilized to enhance or slash magnify holographic images, put motherships up above? And Karen Carpenter, last one, sky spraying. Does Daniel have thoughts about spraying to hide UFO slash UAP activity or a lack of spraying to allow view of UFOs, ours or theirs, to facilitate the desired narrative?
Well, there's a lot of things there. One thing I would say is that they can, you know, visually, that even this Harvard professor came out. Now, whenever anything comes out of Harvard and they're talking about UFOs, they've been granted the authority and the ability to do that. They don't wing it. So when you get like Avi Loeb and guys like that, or this new guy who came out and was talking about how the Tic Tac thing, you know, what he said was true, which was that you can have a display of a Tic Tac and just make it seem like this is what's going on. You can seem like a huge squadron and project the idea a huge squadron is coming in. And, you know, we know that they've had technology like that since the Cuban Missile Crisis, because they were thinking about using something like that during the Cuban Missile Crisis. That's 60 years ago. So how far has it grown? The problem is, again, the nature of the developments on the ground versus what these people, this very small group, hold, which are very advanced. And, you know, there's always going to be some kind of a difference between what the public sees and what's going on in the background. But this level is completely upside down. And the people who've taken the public's trust and run it over a cliff, you know, it reminds me of the whole Social Security situation. And there's a classic story about in the 1980s, Ronald Reagan asked David Stockman to look at Social Security, and Stockman went to look at it and he said, oh my God, it's only a bunch of IOUs. There's no money in there at all. You know, this is what's happening, which is you think you're paying into this thing. You think you're paying into treasuries and, you know, this legacy system. And what they're doing is they're rifling the money out the back door into this other thing that they're building. And they think that they're supermen, that they're super gods for doing this, when in fact they're lowlifes for betraying society by using their position. And, you know, what comes around goes around, as we know. But I will say this in relation to the UFO thing and projecting a false threat. I believe that any UFO threat activity or operation will be a false operation. In other words, I don't think UFOs will be threatening our installations. I think that what will be threatening us will be our own, you know, false flag aircraft designed for this. And I think that the level of technology that they're at, in a word, is terrifying in terms of the kind of illusions that they can create. So I don't trust that system at all. I think that we should work inside the structure of the government and the Constitution to achieve the changes that we need. You know, so I think that's an important distinction about this. I think there's a way to force the transparency through the system that we have, and it comes from the deep reporting. The dark journalism, in my opinion, is the way to get there. That's why I'm here and doing it, because I think once we get on that train of thought, you know, there's this thing, I've said it before, that, you know, if some obscure military intelligence officer somewhere has seen a dead alien body, for example, then on some level we've all seen it. So that's the level that I'm tapping into on this. And it's that kind of connection that isn't something that they can sever. So if we can get the word out about it, it sort of sets off a chain reaction. So as long as we can keep that conversation going, I think we're gold. Yes. And with that, Miss Olivia, you're up.
Okay. Actually, final question. Okay. The synthetic nature. Please ask DJ if he has seen the recent ISS video of hundreds of UFOs converging the South Pacific near Antarctica.
Why don't you send that link to me, and you can, it's Dark Journalist at Twitter, or you can send it to admin@darkjournalist.com. And I have seen some lately. I have to say that, you know, there was a top 10 list debunking a number of things that were out there. And I went back and double checked and things like that. And I'm pretty good at checking out what's legit versus what's put out there. But unfortunately, what's going on the disinformation side is, on one hand, they are feeding you, you know, stories trying to make you go to sleep about things like don't pay attention to this. And, you know, just trying to get you to live in this alternate reality. But on the other hand, they're trying to freak you out. And they are running things through the alternative media to trip them up. So in a way, I feel bad for average people because, you know, it's so much easier with the amount of stuff that gets thrown at people now to get the wrong idea about everything, you know? And so you need a very sound system and a lot of different voices to reflect that truth back in so that we understand it. And that's why I appreciate so much that goes on in the ideas room. We are really working at a system of understanding things and sussing them out, working them out together. What I'm trying to do is bring together a kind of an inside knowledge about these things when it comes to a mystery school activity, the UFO file, and some of these mysteries that are involved around politics, so I can give people a much deeper impression. And I feel like there's a big missing piece. I've mentioned this part before, that the deep state researchers and the UFO researchers are coming from different places. And the deep state researchers are so much more disciplined and have a better knowledge base, but they're missing the UFO file, which is kind of, you know, you can't really get by without it. You won't understand what the government is doing without that. And I've heard people who have been kind of open to things say like, oh, I'm not going to pay attention to that stuff because it's too wild or whatever like that. Look, you can't get to the truth of the matter in the 21st century without the UFO file. It's not going to happen. You need the information involved around the UFO file because it involves economics, politics, black budgets, and motivations inside of that system. So if you study all these areas of intrigue, like drug running and you know, political blackmail and overthrow of government, you're going to get great knowledge base, but you're going to be missing something very heavy. And then on the UFO research side, if you are studying things, but you think the UFO disclosure is going to come through the CIA, then you might as well just quit and, you know, manage a minor league baseball team or something, because it's not, you're not going to get any answers that way. Yes.
Mamasabe1W says, I want the UFO file now.
I agree with that. Fantastic crowd tonight. And I'm going to shout out some people. Wait, as
I've
soon as Miss Olivia.
Of people to thank.
All right.
Super chats. Okay. A cult fan, Gil and Joy R, Linda K, Eurythmia is Fun, State Winch 2, Erica Swenson Elliott, Debbie McAdoo, Ascension Related Tarot, Adele Bezzy 1, Michael Beliveau, Jimmy Lyle Kennemer, Marion Huff, Brett, Wait a Minute 72, Melody Lenz, PV, Happy Camper, Mad Max, Robert Mearns, Floor A, Neil Bauman, Doreen Hewitt, Harvardian, Sarah Jane, The Buddhas of Boston Sports, Johnny Ricardo Bown, and Bob Binder. Thank you so much for your generous super chats.
Unbelievable. Wow. We really appreciate it. And all of your support helps us to do the really deep reports that we want to do here and deliver to you. And also, you know, for all our subscribers, all the support you give us, it really, it's great to have you behind us. We will be back with you shortly. We've got Farrell Part 2, the new John Warner interview, and special reports coming up this week. So it's going to be a wild week. And we'll definitely see you next Friday as well. Let me do a couple of shout outs while we're here. we got Brett. Thank you. I appreciate it, Brett. Callie Karen, Kate Garcia, Brian Howard, Al Kider, 33 Angels Fly. What a great name. Thank you. Josh, Saul Lee, Carl Young. They're all in the house tonight. I know Kate's out there. It's great to see you. Ivan Langley. Peace and love to you all. Stay strong and keep your head up. Well, that's a nice one. Wow. Excellent. Almost poetic there. Project Blue Book must be active. Yeah. You must wonder about Blue Book 2 and NRO 2, right? Just hanging out there in the background. We just don't hear about it. Wow. Thank you. Marikuye Oyesen. I hope I did that right. I am the Dark Messiah. Interesting. Huh. To hear more about that. Najat Madre. Great to see you. Fantastic. Corey Andrews, God bless, and God bless you. Plan D, Wendy Joe, Scott Blackburn, R.D. Chillen. See you all in Livingston. Thank you, Miguel. Sir, it's good to see you. William Prescott, wow. So many great people out there. Black Zionist. Unbelievable. Yeah. Well, remember Casey said Livingston, Montana will someday, you know, Casey gave us a lot and we really owe him quite a great deal of debt, but I think heeding the things that he was telling us is part of, you know, kind of showing our appreciation. Very interesting too. Wow. Think about it. All right. Norman Smith, a couple more. Sean Burke. Yes. Appreciate it. Be good, DJ. Out of the darkness. DJ. Happy Camper. ShadowNet. Fantastic. Provocateur Astrology. There's a name. Why don't we get more deathbed confessions from people involved in the UFO file?
It's a great question.
CIA?
I've wondered that myself.
Well, you know, there was a wave there for a while, and I think they were just got better at shutting them down. But we certainly got some. We got some. Fantastic. Building 7. Yeah, someone mentioned Building 7. There's a weird crisscross with 9/11 and some of these things that we're looking at. And I'll try to articulate that more as we go forward. But there's, you talk about illusion makers. You know, you get some real magicians going on there. Be good, DJ. There we go. See the mark. Part due. Some say Casey got his info from the dark side. No. Casey was a Sunday school teacher. I think what, you know, the remarkable mystery information that came through him even shocked him, and he had to adjust himself to it. So, you know, I mean, at the time in the 1920s, you know, they thought, oh, this guy giving readings, you know, when he was in church, they, you know, they kicked him out of some neighborhoods because they were like, he's too weird, you know, and people are going to him and getting healed. And so they were pulling that trip, but that's, you know, that's just being kind of control freaks. Go knock on Arby's door. Hey, look, he's right back there. And it would be pretty easy to do, but unfortunately, I don't think we get so many answers from Avi Loeb. Setting up that telescope with Lou Elizondo, you know, bringing it up to the ceiling. You can just picture it. Silver Fox. That's some good one. Don Newey. Jesus was an extremist.
It's true.
Unbelievable. Everyone, you had a great show tonight. It's fantastic. More special reports coming up. Montana, 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 Hannah, Montana. Good Lord, there's a god-awful lot going on there, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. And we appreciate the things that you send us in relation to this around this theme about what's happening there at Helena and anything in the surrounding area around Montana. Thank you very much, and we will see you soon. And, you know, it says end broadcast, but after all, Miss Olivia,
never really ends. I do want to say a little prayer for Ohio.
Oh yeah.
And I guess a steel mill exploded in Ohio also.
Oh really?
So yeah, it just keeps coming. And you know, they don't have fresh water, and it's terrible.
You know, I think they have Senator Vance there who is going to go to bat for them. And watch this guy, because I think you might see him as a someone who can really get some things done. And he may end up being a VP on the ticket as well. J.D. Vance. Watch this. Could get interesting. Fantastic. We will see you all. And it's been great to be with you. And have a great weekend.
God bless.